All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's 6 o'clock. I'm going to call to order this special meeting. First item on the agenda is the Pledge of Allegiance. Council member Ferguson will be leading us tonight.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Well, this time I will call for public comment on any non-agenda item. Is there any public comment on non-agenda items tonight? Seeing none in the room, is there anybody online? There's not. Okay. Well, we'll move on then. Well, you know why we're all here? We're here to discuss the response to the water rights letter we received from Lieutenant Governor Juris. I guess I'll lead this in with a little bit of history. You do have it all in the packet there, but I'm going to give you just kind of a little dumbed down mayor version of the history here, and we'll get into the technical stuff here. As you know, water rights were provided to fish, or at least that process got started, and we provided public comment on those rights. At that time, we had meeting with the folks involved in the state, including the fishing game and other entities, NRD and other associated entities. They were not amicable to us receiving the water rights that we think we need to service these future developments that are intrinsic to those properties. We then reached out and have had subsequent conversation with the governor and multiple entities, including I think Habitat was there, and Habitat called that meeting. That meeting was where we got told our offer was our offer. We rejected that offer the first time and requested that meeting. We had a subsequent meeting where me and Mr. Bloomquist went there, and I thought it was somewhat productive. In your packet, you'll note the letter from the Lieutenant Governor stating the position of the governor's office has not changed. But at this point, I think it's crucial for us to get together and discuss as a group where we want this city to go. And I think your votes are of utmost importance here. To that end, I would call on who you want to go for here, John? Probably John. John Bloomquist here is our city attorney we retained for water rights. Kind of give us the backstory and where the city is in water rights, what we need in a very layman's level for us to understand.
Well, they first of all, nice to be here. Nice to meet you folks. John Bloomquist,
John, could you please go to the I'm sorry,
Oh, I'm
the podium.
sorry.
We don't have a microphone that'll pick you up there.
You bet.
Man,
No.
great, you got a monster.
I'm John Bloomquist, attorney from Helena. Been a water rights attorney for about 38 years, and was asked by the city initially to look at the water court's adjudication of water rights is coming back into this space, and then a couple of years ago was asked to take a look at the city's existing water rights and look at those for purposes of getting those through the water court for the adjudication of water rights. And that's your existing water supply, the water rights associated with that. In the course of those conversations, mainly with Kevin and Brad, the subject came up about the future water needs of the city of East Helena and where that water would come from and how that water would be obtained or permitted from the state. And so that discussion led to looking at where. What are the requirements for additional water rights for the city? And in this particular area, this basin, the Upper Missouri Basin, your municipal, your future municipal water use will be groundwater related. I mean, surface water, there's availability of surface water, but treatment is the problem there. It costs a lot to treat water. And so your advisors, your engineers, and then this is common, are looking at groundwater supplies to meet the needs of the future growth of the city. Well, in this area, much of up above Great Falls in Montana, the Water Use Act requires if you're going to develop groundwater, and that groundwater is connected to surface water, you need to mitigate or offset, and when you develop the groundwater, if it's connected, you're going to pull or deplete surface water sources. And in this area, the state law requires that those depletions be mitigated or offset with taking an existing water right for that depleted surface source. In this instance, we'll just say Prickly Pear Creek, and retire an existing water right. And the idea there is you would all, what formerly was taken out of the creek and depleted from the creek, you're just offsetting with your groundwater development. It's called mitigation. So if the city is going to develop additional groundwater supplies in this area, it's very likely, highly likely, that the state would say, state DNRC would say, you're going to deplete surface water from Prickly Pear Creek. And as such, you need to find existing water rights in Prickly Pear Creek to use for mitigation. So that was the whole background of how this discussion on Prickly Pear Creek water rights and the former Sarco water rights and development of the former Sarco property sort of came about. Be honest, I was initially alerted to what was going on with the former Sarco water rights when Fish, Wildlife, and Parks put out an environmental assessment that was forecasting they were going to get most of the water rights associated with former Sarco property and change those to in-stream flow in Prickly Pear Creek. So we commented on that proposal, and the main concern was if you changed those water rights to solely to in-stream flow, and the city down the road needs to develop additional groundwater supplies that are going to deplete Prickly Pear Creek, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks can be in a real position to stop additional development of groundwater. And so we made those comments, and the long and the short of it is, we suggested at that time also that a portion of the water rights that were going to go to Fish, Wildlife, and Parks would be well suited to go to the city of East Helena for these mitigation purposes that we talked about. So that's the background. And from that, we had several discussions with, mostly with the trust folks, EPA, the trust folks, and they were kind of curious about what were being proposed, what was the ask, if you will, for the former Sarco water rights. And those just, I think we kind of educated or helped them understand what we were talking about and why the former Sarco water rights would be well suited, and particularly the industrial rights, be very well suited to carve off a portion of those for the city of East Helena, still be plenty of water rights for Fish, Wildlife, Parks to go to the stream, and thought it was a pretty viable approach. And that led to the discussions between, I think, the city and the East End and Fish, Wildlife, Parks, Trust, and then most importantly, the governor's office, because we've been directed that way, because the beneficiaries of the trust have got EPA and the state. And the state seems to be the one that was really calling the shots, if you will, with what happens to these historical water rights, because they were proposed to all go to Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. And that proposal was some time ago, and Fish, Wildlife, and Parks really has not moved the ball on doing anything. They seem to be a little more active now or engaged now. But the hope was just to get some of those industrial water rights that would meet the addition, the future growth, and particularly the future growth associated with those Asarco properties that were in that area that was annexed in a few years back. So that's the general idea. I think, as the mayor said, the state and the trust, the result of those conversations, offered up two water rights. There's five industrial rights. The this this trust had offered up two of those. And just the rough numbers is the memo I put together. Brad has a map, which is it's an actual map that shows just the Asarco properties, right? That were annexed,
Yes.
both north and south of the highway. And the total area that was annexed based on the forecasts are going to require to meet their demand once they're developed. And that's the first line on my little memo. There's about 3,257 acre feet of water. An acre foot of water is a quantification of volume, block of water that's necessary. And 3,257 acre feet is 312,000 gallons per acre foot. It's a pretty good chunk of water, let's just say that. But to meet the needs, the additional demand, future demand for the development of the Asarco properties that have been annexed, RPA's has forecast 3,257 acre feet. There's five industrial water rights, and the two that they have tentatively offered, if you will, the volume associated with those water rights is 1,130 acre feet. And so the shortfall is about 2,127 acre feet. The other three industrial rights that were not offered have a volume of 1,939 acre feet. So there still would be a shortfall, but only a shortfall of about 187 feet if the city was able to acquire those five industrial rights and then use those for mitigation in Prickly Pear Creek as you develop your future groundwater supply. That would be the scenario where the city is for all intents and purposes, fully mitigating what would be necessary to develop the groundwater supply to serve all those areas that have been annexed. So that's really what was being proposed. There are a lot of other water rights the Sarco has, their irrigation rights, stock rights, but several irrigation rights that could still go to Fish, Wildlife, and Parks under our proposal. Still be changed in stream flow. So it was kind of an idea to try to have a city could meet the future growth needs of the already annexed property, which is going to need water supply anyway. Mitigation is not taking water out of the creek, it's actually leaving the water with water rights to be changed into the creek. Fish, Wildlife, Parks could go ahead and do their in stream flow change on the rest of the water rights. But we have not been successful in convincing at least the governor's office to this point, and the lieutenant governor of that approach. So that is the background of where the letters came from, both in November of last year, where the offer of the two water rights came up, and it was the non-negotiable letter. We decided to continue to try to negotiate.
Here we are, still negotiating.
And did a couple times, but then we got the letter from the lieutenant governor of what, April 20th or September 15th. Excuse me. So I'm happy answering questions. It's not that as complicated sometimes I make it sound. You need an exchange of water these days when you go to develop groundwater. Groundwater is what's going to supply you folks with your future municipal use. So these surface rights, are going to be necessary if you're going when you start down the permitting road with getting your future water supplies or some water rights. If it's not these, you're going to have to find some other ones. So,
Thank you, John. I think Brad's here just to answer any questions we have in engineering. But I don't think Brad needs to present at this point. I think
I
it's
had a
good.
question for Brad, maybe.
You can ask him, sure.
Randy, you over there?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Then probably for Mr. Koontz as well here in a minute.
He's like, whoa.
So Brad, the map you handed out here,
Yes.
um, shows all of the, is it all of the shaded areas? Are those all of the former Asarco lands that have been transferred to this point or are anticipated to be transferred? Sort of goes.
Those are the ones that I'm aware of, I guess, and all the ones that we've had discussion about being sold for development.
Is that inclusive of all of the Asarco lands, though? Because there's chunks out there that are, some of it's in the floodway, but there's the chunk left of or west of Section 8 there that you have labeled.
Yeah, that section is still a Asarco property.
But we don't know what's going
We
there.
don't know what's going to happen there. Also, I mean, some of the old plant property, which I don't think can be developed.
But we don't know.
But we're not, I'm not really sure what the rules are there. It's just not what I know about.
So these are the assumptions we have to date based on
Yep.
developers coming to the city and land transfers that have occurred or are going to occur that the city's been read in
Or
on.
where METG has indicated that they're trying to use that property for development purposes.
Okay. And then in the upper right-hand corner of this map, you do some fancy math here. And for me, kind of what I asked for, or at least thought would might be helpful for the council. And again, this is a council decision, but I wanted to at least walk through the math you do up here. I think when we talk about the hundreds, if not thousands of acres, I know at least this one section one is almost 800 acres, all being transferred, not all, but substantially being transferred, section one, seven, four, and three. To this point are residential that we're tracking. And then potentially we don't know what's going on with eight or what's going on west of eight. I think the discussion here in Montana, and especially in a municipality, the water demand, what is the biggest water demand on a municipality given our water rights and the users of water in a city?
Well, I mean, I think there's kind of two large demands. One is the average day. I mean, every day that the city exists, it draws water, and so over time that adds up to be quite a lot of water.
Who uses that water within a city?
Residents, businesses, but residents are probably the biggest users. I mean,
And those sections of land have been transferred by the subsidiaries of the trust group, the state and EPA, and all these people have approved all of these land transfers or coming land transfers to housing, right?
that's my understanding. I mean, I
Okay.
think parcel number two there is still, they're trying to find a suitor for that property.
That's industrial, but generally speaking, the large demand, the large transfers have gone to housing
Residential. Yeah.
and dense residential for some of them, which
Yes.
is great, and the city supports.
And the state had a say in that process as well, correct?
Yes, they did.
The state also authorized the land transfer of that, knowing full well what that
Yeah.
eventual purpose
Well,
was.
it was not just the state, the EPA, which is the other major party in
But
this.
I'm asking about the state right now. They also had a say. Thank you.
When METG wants to transfer property, they have to get the approval of the state, along with
So
the other property.
I'm just trying to set the table for what we're looking at up here, because I think bringing it back down to homes here in Montana, in East Helena, and our growth, commercial use, it's harder to anticipate demand and how much water they actually use, depending on what their business they're doing. But for these tracts, it is residential, and we kind of have an equation up here, which you've laid out, which is EDUs versus demand, which is acre feet a year, which I think is helpful, and I think that's the talk. That is the proper numerical way that water rights are spoken to. So I, though, as a city attorney and us, when we think about these things being subdivided, and when we hear about Section 1 being up to 4,000 homes, we see, and I see Mr. Kuntz is here for Section 4 and 3, for Rose Hills and a potential other transfer for Habitat for Humanity, we think about homes. We think about EDUs, equivalent dwelling units, the amount of demand for water. So equating the acre feet versus the EDUs is very important because we think in terms of number of houses or apartments or demand. That's how we talk in the city versus the water rights world, where I think the common term is acre feet per year, which is what we have up top there. And if I can draw this out, the totals that we have, Brad, for EDUs for the lands, again, from the former Asarco properties, the total that we're anticipating currently, based on what we know, and again, there's at least one chunk that we don't know, west of Town Pump, Section 8 there, is 6,550. Is that correct?
That is correct. Total
EDUs.
number of homes or equivalent dwelling units.
And then the number to the right of that, the 3,257.1, is the demand per acre feet that those EDUs will require,
Yep.
which is essentially 0.5 or 0.497 and a bunch of other numbers. So about 0.5 of an acre feet. Okay. And I'm trying to equate that then to Mr. Bloomquist's discussion as to the shortfall, given that all of these lands are, yes, in the city, but they were former industrial properties. We had members of the beneficiaries at our planning and zoning meetings asking for those to be zoned industrial and then later to sell them to housing developments. The shortfall given the transfer of what we're at. So, and Mr. Bloomquist, I'm going to transition a bit here. What we're currently being offered is two of the industrial rights. Is that correct?
That's correct.
For 1,130 acre feet, which, based upon Brad's numbers here on the map of 3,257.1, a shortfall of 2,127.1, which, when divided by calculator here, 2,127.1 divided by the per EDU residential use of 497, 4,279.87 houses short of water, meaning these water rights were attached to the property that is currently annexed into the city, belong to ASARCO, and all of the lands and the industrial uses they have. Their sh for the use that they transfer these properties to, meaning a residential, they are offering us short of 4,200, essentially 80 homes. Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean,
Okay.
I need to do all the math exactly with you,
Right.
but I'm right with you.
And then the second line down on Mr. Bloomquist, if they gave us all five industrial water rights that currently belong to ASARCO and the beneficiaries, meaning the state and EPA, if they gave us all of those, we'd be short 187.6, again, divided by the per EDU use of acre feet annually is 497. We'd be short 377.46 houses. So we go from over 4,000 to down to less than 400.
Which is still a development bigger than Highland Meadows.
Which is all Highland Meadows.
Bigger than.
Yeah.
So we're still
Only big,
short
yeah.
our current largest development in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay. But substantially better, is that right?
Oh, I mean, yeah, if we got all the industrial
It's
rights,
just
we'd be
tough when we're
way short.
talking water rights versus EDUs, like trying to make things apples to apples for people to understand. I think that from what you've seen from the governor's office, lieutenant governor and the governor in the state, and the initial offer from the trust group, is their assumption that we have plenty enough water rights in hand already? And this may be a Bloomquist question, and that we don't need all these water rights.
Well, other correspondence from them has come across like we have plenty of water rights and we shouldn't need these. And I don't think they're taking the full picture. For one, those money those rights have not been adjudicated yet. So there are some of those, there's a couple of rights in McClellan Creek particularly that we just don't know where we sit because I think they're confusing. And I know John can add some more discussion to that, but those are two of your larger water rights. Those are surface water rights out of McClellan Creek. And we're not really sure how they fit in or if those are still kind of valid in a way because of, the way that those radio wells were done back in the 80s. There's not a clear, I mean, John, maybe you can lead a little bit of discussion there because I feel like I'm not clear that we have those or we don't have those.
Are they using those in their assumptions of the city's current water rights?
We couldn't speak to
I have never seen anything that clarifies how they are getting to what they say.
They include those in, the chart that they have for the city's existing rights, they include McClellan Creek surface water as part of the volume.
And what would it take to actually develop and use those water rights on the surface McClellan Creek rights?
If we were to utilize those, it would take surface water treatment plant.
And
So,
what is the cost of a surface water treatment plant?
I would say between $16 and $18 a gallon. So
Oh.
just doing some quick math there, Kevin, what's 20 times?
Oh, that's he's gonna add
And what is
much.
the
Seven,
FTEs
six,
necessary to
seven.
run a water to run a water treatment plant of that size?
Oh, I would say 2.5 people.
Full time,
Yeah.
2.5 FTE perpetually, like forever.
Yep. Because there's quite a bit. I mean, when you do surface water treatment, there's a lot of things to do.
When we talk treatment, we're talking adding
Talking
chemicals and
about
things.
adding flocculation, we have to go through filtration, and then also there's you have to disinfect it in a little bit different way because some disinfection byproducts from organics. There's
How
quite a bit there.
large of a facility is that?
In terms of like
Where
footprint,
would we
building
put it?
footprint,
Yeah.
yeah.
And
I
how
mean,
big would it have to be?
it would be 150 by 150 square, and have to have several tanks so that we could always meet demands. And then there's usually a kind of a water tank at the facility, and you would pump from there up into the McCullough tanks, what it would take. So it'd be,
Similarly, think of
I
like
mean,
a
it's,
Calidus treatment
yeah,
plant,
so a
top
number of
10 for,
acres,
I
a few
mean, yeah.
acres.
Yes. And that's something these days that's in the ballpark of 30 million.
And
I mean, no, yeah, 5 million.
would that reduce the flow of McClellan Creek?
It would.
Oh yeah.
Does McClellan Creek flow into Prickly Pear Creek?
Yes, it does.
Under Mr. Bloomquist's proposal, the thing that we've been requesting through the governor's office, would we see a reduction in the flow of the surface waters that end up in Prickly Pear Creek?
No.
Okay.
I have a question because it's been discussed that we have two, but tell me more about the Spring Creek industrial right that's being offered and why you're not including that in your industrial rights conversation.
That's a good point. They offered other water rights as well, and I should have mentioned that there's a package of rights. The two industrial rights are Prickly Pear Creek, and there's another industrial right for Spring Creek. Spring Creek, at least what's projected for the areas of development of your groundwater sources, Spring Creek water right doesn't really do the city much good from a mitigation perspective because the depletion is likely going to be targeted at Prickly Pear Creek, if I understand where your future wells would be located.
Oh, value.
So Prickly Pear is really the source of, or the focus of where you'd want mitigation water rights to be related to. You can make an argument, well, we're leaving Spring Creek to get Prickly Pear Creek. It gets just infinitely more complicated in the permitting process unless you have water right on the source that they're targeting for depletion. The other thing you need to remember is for mitigation purposes, especially on Prickly Pear Creek, you don't just need any water right. You need the more senior water rights, okay? Because the NRC will look at whether your mitigation plan is real mitigation. You can't walk in to the NRC with a water right on Prickly Pear Creek that's say 1918 or 1900 because those rights are only in priority for maybe 3 or 4 weeks of the year. Okay. And I've done some permitting on Prickly Pear Creek, and mitigation. DNRC is looking at it. You need something in the neighborhood of 1867, 1866, or earlier to have an effective mitigation plan. So that's another consideration when you look at mitigation. To be fair, there were other water rights that were offered, but they were related to wells, another McClellan Creek irrigation right of 1868, which doesn't do much good from a mitigation perspective. And the groundwater wells really weren't useful, in my opinion, as mitigation water. Maybe you could do some offset down the road or something, but the two rights, when I say the two offered, the ones that were useful, in my opinion, for the city's purposes.
You have questions for Jane?
I have questions for Brad. So it seems as though folks are looking at our current water rights and the current demand based on the Asarco properties. Are there other properties aside from the Asarco properties who may end up needing water from the city in the next 20 years?
Yeah, and I maybe I should have brought that map, Keith, but there, you know, we just wanted to show the exact historical properties on the map that you guys have in front of you so you could understand what water was needed, you know, to serve those developments alone for a year. But there are several places the city has developed a long-term map, kind of a 20, 30-year lookout of what may be developed. There are a lot of other properties that we certainly feel like could need water or could want to annex into the city and be part of the city system over the next 20 years. Is that
I
what you're
guess,
looking for, Pete?
yeah,
Is
I guess my question is, they assume that you can just use your current water rights to just serve all the Asarco lands, whereas we have additional properties, and mostly to the north, that have the potential of being annexed into the city and needing those water rights. The city is going to grow other than just to the south and the Asarco properties. There are other places that are going to need those water rights as they become residents of the city of East Helena.
And that's correct. And I mean, if kind of in a nutshell, I mean, it doesn't make sense to me that you would use all of your existing water rights that you guys have developed and own now to serve only Asarco and then have none left when somebody else comes to town and wants to connect.
And
That, that's what I'm getting to,
that
right?
the city's position is we have adequate water rights for the growth that we see coming. However, we have annexed all of these lands into the city for cleanup purposes and other reasons that have water rights that were associated with them, and it makes only sense that they bring their water rights with them in order to serve those properties, especially when you are now selling those properties to the highest demand water users of any land use available. You intentionally sold them to home developers, and now you want to strip the water rights and give us two of the five industrial rights, which, as we heard from our water rights attorney, are the cleanest and easiest for us to mitigate and serve these properties as to the developers that you sold them to.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did have a go ahead. Sorry.
Do we know what any of the water rights with any of the potential annexation looks like? Do we know what La Costa Grande's water rights look like? Do we know what Pele Park's water rights look like? Do we know what any of those? Do you have any idea?
No, other than
I mean, small municipal wells, I wouldn't imagine they're great.
you know, I do know that La Casa Grande's they struggle sometimes.
Yeah.
They did drill a new well, and so maybe it's getting better. But we just haven't done anything for them, and you know, I doubt that they have a lot of extra water rights.
Well, and
They've just
obviously
known the
not for
struggles
the
that they've had
growth, but for even their own
for their
future
own, even.
development.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I
For
might also
future
ask.
intent. I was going to say, you know, there are places too that, I mean, it just maybe not in the next short term, but you know, Red Fox Meadows, for instance. I'm not saying that they're likely to be connected in the short term. They're already connected to your sewer system. So as you look out beyond the next 10 or 20 year planning cycle, I mean, those things are just naturally things that occur. And you know, all of those things are going to at some point be a problem for the city if you don't plan ahead.
Those properties have also already waived protest annexation, correct?
That's correct.
But again, I think it's proper to talk about the plume, the groundwater issue that directly is attached to the use on these Asarco plants. Like, hasn't that groundwater plume, has it affected wells and the potential for out in the valley based on groundwater movement that we
Well,
it's difficult to
there's a
anticipate?
groundwater protection area, which is you have to get a permit, and that, you know, that is definitely a concern. I mean, Wylie Well 3, we always are kind of keeping an eye on that because we think that there's a potential there. And that's one of your main wells that you use today, is that plume is awful close to it. And I think that that's something that you want to just make sure. I mean, where that plume is going over time, I mean, I know they monitor it, but you know, there's a concern there. Particularly given the where the gravel pit is and how they dug that gravel pit adjacent to it, it draws water a little bit differently than it used to.
I did have a question for Mr. Kuntz if he's available. Mr. Kuntz, just based on the map, and I don't know if you have it in front of you or if you can see it, the two prospective properties, you've already obtained Section 4, is that right?
And Mr. Mayor, yes, that's correct. Four is acquired.
And number three.
Three is an old image. So recently, EPA and DEQ signed off on the release of 30 additional acres. So
So is that less than what's shaded there?
this morning, yeah. So that's it goes along 282, basically starting at the siding, and it basically carries around the first CAMU there.
Again.
So there's 30 additional acres.
So the organization that would approve your use of the water in those homes has sold you, has the state has also approved of that land transfer too?
Yeah, they've signed off and approved the transfer of those lands. So those were originally deed restricted sections of the smelter site for the use of additional corrective action management units. And they've now been released for residential purposes.
And in section four, the estimate the city currently has, and again, we kind of got to go off best estimates. 350 EDUs in section three or four, is that about correct?
That's correct.
And then what are you now anticipating in section three?
At our current density projections of 6.1, with the addition of the 30 acres, you'd be right around 100 additional units, EDUs, into what you have there. So it would take it to 1450 total in parcels 4 and 3.
Okay. That's all I had. I mean,
yeah,
we kind of plan in the dark as cities. We don't know what developers are doing until they tell us, and some people like to hold their cards closer than others.
There's also such a gap in EDUs as far as water, but 4 and 3 have the potential to be lower water use residential compared to where you might have higher, larger yards, which, greater irrigation. I mean, that's right in the needle of it.
No, yeah, I'm tracking. And at the city level, we work on the law of averages. Yeah. We try to. We're talking 6,550.
Just to be proper in the meeting course here, we're going to come back to questions. I do want to have a public comment portion of this. So we've had the presentation from the members of the PECHA and as well as Don. I would like to see if there's any public comment on this agenda item. Seeing none in person, is there anybody online? There is public comment provided to each one of you from Sydney Brooks. I think is pretty valuable, and I direct your attention to that. Course of action there, I think, is something we might want to discuss. But at this point, I think this is a good time to turn it over to you guys and for any questions, discussion, you have the people here to ask questions. I think what we're looking for is a nod and a course forward. Obviously, we have Lieutenant Governor's offer in front of us, which has not changed. And we have our position. And, I don't know that I'd like to have a thought process from you guys. I think the involvement is important here, but as much information as you can grasp from these guys are here and in the packet, we provide as much as I think we can. I think that this conversation though needs to be kind of directed by you guys right now.
Well, I have a number of questions if nobody else wants to go first.
Donnie had one first.
Well, I guess one of my questions is if we reject this and say, no, okay, we'll take what you're giving us. No, we won't bother you again. What is our, I realize that could be down the road, litigation upon litigation for it, but what is our probability of gaining more?
So I would interject here that under Montana law, we do have a couple areas in which we can close a public meeting, and one is for litigation purposes, litigation strategy purposes. We don't do it lightly, but if your questions are going to range into litigation strategy, meaning, what are our chances? What are our options as far as if we sue or deny? Because right now it's a take it or leave it that's on the table, council member.
Right.
And I don't want to over-direct, but I do want you to be mindful as you ask questions to, if we get into direct, like if we say no and we end up in litigation, what do we do then? Or what are, like, we have the ability to close a public meeting, but that's up to you guys.
Well, I think that's the question that needs to be answered.
We would remove the public and it would be the council, myself, the mayor, the city clerk, and probably Kevin. And our attorneys, yeah.
Before we go down that road, that's a valuable thing to consider. Just to touch on Donna's question. The biggest thing I think in that letter is that it's not just about the percentages, and we can discuss that. This is not legal strategy, so we can do this here. It is about the caveat that this is the number, this is you're going to get, and there is no more asking. And there's no more asking in the future. There's no more future. It is this.
Would waive our right to protest.
Waive our right to, yes. I think that's a crucial thing for you guys to consider in your thought process. It walls off any greater number than that in perpetuity.
So in Cindy's letter, she makes it seem as if she's had a conversation with the EPA and that they're willing to change their stance. Possibly if we can show two things from the conversation I received to, or we've heard tonight, is that one and two could be easily identified, which may help change the EPA's opinion. Now, if we change the EPA's opinion, what does that matter to the state? And what does that matter to this letter that we have to respond to by October 1st, in which we got 2 weeks to respond to after a city council meeting?
I think the October 1st date is like the previous date. It's a, I'm going to put a deadline on you, and I don't know that there's any.
Well, legal. But there's a threat in there. Of,
there's a threat.
There'll be official wildlife parks.
Well, that process is runs through the Water Rights Court, and it, if you respond, if you don't, if you respond kind of, all it says is, I think it's a, we're not going to have the offer for you anymore after that date is what it is.
It was more than that. It was, it's all going to the FWP.
It will be transferred.
You know, they can't do that without going through the Water Rights Court. That's the discussion.
That was what was written in the letter.
But,
right.
But that's their intent.
Threats like
their
that
intent.
Should be made then if that's not the
act. Their intent process. Is to do that. Sure. That's not, there's a process for that up to and including the two entities involved in that transfer. And the other entity AOS is to the, for your question and to Cindy's letter, the EPA is the other entity that has that, that say over those water rights. The two entities that control those water rights right now are the state. And although we've been discussing with the governor's office, I think the attorney general actually has the power to transfer those. And NRD is the one that's basically, I think, grabbing a ship on that, and where they go and what they do, as well as with information from Fish. The other entity is the EPA. The EPA has, I think, been very, they want more information. And that letter indicates that. I think that there's more of an openness than there is currently being shown from the governor's office. Now, if crystal ball, if one says one thing, one agrees the other, I don't know where that goes. I don't know. You have two entities that control water rights and not agreeing.
But right now they're in agreeance.
One is in grabbing the ship and one is in at least not ahead of that right now, but I don't think that they're as locked into that position or any position.
I have some hypothetical questions because I need a starting place for some things. The water rights not offered to the city for whatever reason by the lieutenant governor, could they be used for something different? Are we missing something? Is there something more that they could be used for that?
The water rights that were not offered?
Correct. That we've asked for in response and are still told no.
They could be used really for in-stream flow, fish, wildlife, and parks, in-stream flow. They could be used for mitigation by the trust itself. They could be used for mitigation. The industrial rights, the purpose of the industrial rights is industrial purpose. Use them for something else, you need to go through the change process. There are irrigation water rights that could be used for irrigation, or they could be changed in stream flow, or they could be changed for mitigation, or other purposes. You know, if somebody wanted to use surface water for different purpose, gravel, washing gravel or something like that. But you always have to go through the change process with the state. Does that answer your?
Kind of. I'm just wondering why there would be such a dismissal and a non-willingness to, what is there something that we're missing that they could be used for that we just aren't being told?
I think one of the underlying, the cleanup looks at benefits, environmental benefits, cleaning up contaminated property, and making it available for residential development. Big benefit of the whole process. Another benefit is to the environment and fish, wildlife resources. The in-stream flow aspect of this is a benefit from a cleanup perspective. And so that's You see this in a lot of cleanup settings where if there's water rights, they get moved downstream flow, and there's certain credits for how good the cleanup did. So there's certainly the I guess a theme or an interest in in-stream flow related to these water rights and related to the cleanup. There's an interest in that.
I see that more from the EPA side than the state's side for the cleanup purposes, but thank you for explaining
I
that.
certainly do too. That's EPA. That's a more of a focus, if you will, there.
You answered a lot of my questions. Would a letter stating, I'm personally along the lines of what Cindy's route is for now, which is that we ask for more time. But my fear in that is that that will be declared as a waiving of wanting any of the rights, and then they're all transferred to FWP, which, however that goes, will still be a bigger mess. But if we were to respond to that letter stating to the effect of, we need more time, we'd like to have an additional conversation or more, without accepting or denying the offer available.
Pardon, so I'm not, that was written right then. I just stuck my throat, man.
Because I fear that that is what will happen, is that it will just be accepted as, well, they denied it, because that's how she stated it in the last letter, was you denied these, so you will again, which is not factual, and in no way did we deny them. We just don't agree with them and want to negotiate them.
So we denied their initial offer. That was exactly what we discussed and did the first time. We denied their initial offer, and we sought the course of negotiation. In the course of those negotiations, and I've been to all of them. John was at one. Jacob was at one. But I've been to all of them. My view of that is she's telling you exactly what her intent is. And there is, if you ask for it, I appreciate Cindy's perspective of asking for some time. They're not going to give you any more time, is my opinion. That they are all done with time. They are like, we've made our decision. That's the impression I 100% have gotten from them in being in the room with them. They made their decision. They told it to you. We had a meeting. They told it to us again. We had another meeting, and they told it to us again. And they're now. That's an opinion. That's my opinion. But having had the discussion with them, is from the state administration side, that is my view, that they are.
And
Yeah.
that's could be fully the state, but we have to respond to the state.
Right.
But in the other regard, we then have the option to fix this, whatever the word would be, to negotiate this or to respond to the EPA to seek approval through them, which may then get us further
Absolutely.
without litigating the issue.
Processes wise, I think that. Opinion West, this is an opinion. So I'm thought-wise, I think that they are, I think Cindy's idea is just and avenue we should absolutely pursue. And I think speaking out anything from the EPA is something we should be on right now on the double. But think the state has made their position clear and they made it clear multiple times that they're not going to negotiate. I don't know time frames they're going to give you more, but I think they're all, that's my opinion. I think that mode of operation is again, the state has the want to change all of them or whatever their offer is into in-stream flows. That's their thought going forward. And I think the city's got a multiple avenues to pursue up to and including the one that's expensive, which is the ultimate one of challenging them in the court. And that's a discussion we could have later. But that is the one that is the ultimate decider. Kristen Juris saying I'm going to do it doesn't mean it gets done. There's a process here.
Understandable, but it makes it that much harder.
John, could you maybe walk us through the timeline of if we don't sign this letter, and if Fish, Wildlife, and Park Control, or if the state chose to award these rights to Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, what that, in your professional opinion what that time frame looks like of how fast that moves forward, when we would have the opportunity to object to those water rights being awarded. Can you kind of walk us through that process?
Sure. Assume the trust transfers the water rights to Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, then they have to do a couple of things. They have to finish up their environmental review. They did an environmental assessment of their proposed change. That's where we commented. We still had no response to those comments, no final environmental review on that proposal. They would have to do that. That takes time. The DNRs, they then have to apply to the state DNRC to change the water rights to in-stream flow. And that's an application process that they have to go to the DNRC and show them that the change to in-stream flow does not adversely affect other water rights, that the benefit to the fishery exists, and they have to quantify that benefit. It's a technical exercise. And but it's a state agency. DNRC would be the decision maker on whether to approve or disapprove the change to in-stream flow. That is an opportunity for objections to occur to that change. The objection process is an administrative hearing process under the Montana Administrative Procedures Act. If the city objected, the city would have to, the DNRC's process is they take an application, they review it, they issue a proposal for decision to grant or deny the application, then they publicly notice it. And other water users on Prickly Pear Creek could object. And I would suspect, looking at where Fish, Wildlife, and Parks wanted to move their area of measurement of those in-stream flows, it would likely get some attention from other water right holders on Prickly Pear Creek that would maybe object as well. So that would be a administrative hearing process. It's an evidentiary hearing type process decided by a DNRC hearing examiner. That process will take minimum of a year or more to do, unless it gets fast tracked and there's no objections, then it's a more condensed. But I would suspect this will get objections, and the city could be an objector or other water users could be an objector. And I would suspect it would likely go that route. An objector needs to show that if the proposal from DNRC is to approve it, you need to demonstrate that the decision was incorrect on one of the statutory criteria for a change authorization, which is in a fishery setting, the changed in-stream flow benefits the fishery and they can quantify the benefit. It's not just, hey, there's more water in the stream, it must be a benefit. They need to show biologically there is. Of course, they're full of biologists, so they're going to have that avenue. And the biggest hurdle, I think, for them is to show a lack of adverse effect on other users. Because if they drop the point of measurement or the point of protection too far, they're going to be jumping over junior water right holders that may object to it. And that, so they may shrink where they would be approved, but that it's an expensive process. It's very much like going to court and litigating an administrative hearing in that setting. But you're probably looking at a year or more before there's a decision. Once there's a final decision, those can be taken up to the district courts on judicial review. So time frame, you're over a year anyway before you know the decision from DNRC or whether they approved it or not. If the water rights get transferred to Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, I think there's also another scenario that would need to be looked at is as Pete was talking about, these water rights were attached to the Asarco property. The irrigation water rights were parcels that were irrigated at one point in time. The industrial rights were, at the Schmelzer site primarily. Those water rights, all water rights are attached to the land that they're used. In this instance, they've gone in and they've stripped the water rights from the area that they were originally used. And as I understand it, deeded away to certain developers, and they're still holding some. I don't know all the details there, but we've been starting to look into the question of, when did the annexation occur? When did the trust start to sever the water rights or strip them away from the land? And how did that work in conjunction with some of these deed transactions? It's part of the puzzle. I don't have this whole picture to, but I think it certainly needs to be looked at from what I've seen so far. I have some real questions on the timing. And so that's another aspect that I think a little more time would be nice, but I don't know if it's going to change their tune or not.
Yeah, I don't
know. So I don't know if that helps.
It does. My only comment, again, I would interject that if we begin to speak about how much the city's willing to commit, how far we're willing to go as far as challenging these in litigation and our response, I would just suggest that that might be an opportune time to close the meeting to the public and have those litigation strategy type discussions.
So at this point, do you guys have further questions for any of the people regarding?
I move to move this meeting to a closed conversation.
I would like a head nod or a yes from the other council members if they agree.
Yeah, then I appreciate my movement, okay. But I yes.
And the discussion at that time will be pertaining to litigation strategy. And
I'm getting there, Wes.
Correct. And if we wander off of that back to a subject of that is not within the litigation strategy, we will.
And we don't have to move to close the meeting?
Well, we will. We'll turn off the stuff. Okay. We'll excuse the public and then have a discussion on litigation strategy. And then once that's concluded, we will open it right back up. So
at this point, I think that the council has indicated their willingness to discuss litigation strategy. And at this point, I'm going to move this meeting to an executive session,
right?
Which is where the city's interest outweighs that of the public right to know. And we're going to move it to that session. So at this point, we're going to cancel the Zoom.
And on this, we want to still report just in case we
should. And I'm going to ask those people who are not in the direct employ of the city to please vacate the room and shut the door on the way out.
I'm going to use the restroom.
No door.
So,
no, because it's one recording. And she has to post it because the open part's on it. She has to end this one.
Okay, so we just stop the meeting and start.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah. So just
you're welcome.